Honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler. Brought to you by this local station and its sponsors. And presented everywhere on the air and online by Paul Everett's RV Country. With 8 locations in 5 western states.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. Visiting today with 92-year-old Cal Erickson. Next week, we're going to meet his brother Grant, who has quite a story from the Navy and the battleship New Mexico from World War II. But this week, we're learning about Cal and the 13 missions he completed as a B-26 pilot during World War II.
Those 13 missions were not the extent of your adventures or your memories in the Army Air Corps. Not too many guys that I've spoken to, and I've interviewed, you know, hundreds of pilots, but who got the chance to fly their brother around. How did that come about?
Well, my older brother, he was in the engineers, and he was heading for home out of, I believe, Le Havre was the base that they got out of. And so one day I was just in the barracks, and he walked in. And so I didn't know he was coming. I didn't know where he was. So we've had a nice long visit, and then I flew him back to his base there. That was real special.
And he was 16 years older than you,
yeah.
That brother.
Yeah.
So he must have thought his baby brother was pretty neat guy.
He probably thought I was crazy. I kind of gave him a little thrilling ride over there.
Oh, did you take some liberties? What'd you do?
I was just kind of buzzing around, and I buzzed went over the place where he was staying, like Tent City there, you know, and I just flew over that. And
low level.
Low level.
Got their attention?
Yeah, I got their attention. It was kind of fun.
VE Day, when you found out that Germany had surrendered, here you've been bombing German targets. That's what all these missions were. It's German forces have been shooting you, trying to shoot you down, and came close enough. Mm-hmm. What did that mean to you to find out that this war in Europe is over?
Oh, that was great. Meant a lot.
But you weren't exactly eager to get home. You volunteered to stay?
I did. Looking back on it now, I don't know why.
Some guys have told me they volunteered to stay because they knew they weren't ready to dive back into civilian life after living that military existence.
Yeah, that could have been. And I heard that I could keep flying, and most of the pilots didn't want to fly anymore. So I said, well, maybe I can see some of the country. And I never had any fear of the airplane. A lot of people did. So I said, well, I think I'll stay over. I got to see Sweden and Denmark. I had one of the ground officers, I think he was a colonel. He wanted to go to fly to Copenhagen and Stockholm. And so my commanding officer had me do it, maybe because I was Scandinavian. He knew I was Scandinavian.
Sure. Erickson, how could you not be?
Right. And so I got that trip, and it was interesting.
I guess I should have you tell everyone what your crew's nickname for you was, too, if you're talking about your Scandinavian ancestry.
Oh, Leif. Leif Erickson.
Your Viking canoe was a little more high-powered than the one that he had all those centuries earlier.
Right.
So you got to see those ancestral homelands, Sweden and Denmark. You got to see Rome and Naples and a lot of Europe. Did it ever weigh on you to see how much devastation there was, to see how some of these cities were destroyed?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like, Germany was practically obliterated. I mean, there's hardly anything left.
So I guess with that in mind, with everything you did in the war and everything you witnessed, when you look back on it now, what are you proud of? What gives you that sense of satisfaction or accomplishment for what you did and what you were a part of?
Good question. Well, part of getting rid of Hitler, I guess. And I had nothing against the German people as such. You know, I don't know if I felt any great satisfaction of what we did. We destroyed their country, basically.
But you mentioned getting rid of Hitler, and I'm sure eventually you got a clearer and more complete picture of everything he had done. Do you remember when you heard about the concentration camps and what had been done to the Jewish people and others?
Yeah, yeah.
What did that do to you, to realize that?
It was very sad. I don't know. Just bad things all the way around.
Yeah, I have a few more questions along those lines, but Another thing I find interesting is that you went back years later and you got to see the same airstrip that you flew off of during World War II?
I did, yeah.
What was that like?
Oh, that was great. I went with my wife and her brother and his wife. That made my trip right there. The runways were still there. None of the no buildings. They had put tires, stacks of tires up in the middle of the runway so people wouldn't use them. I understand that it was still owned by America.
Oh, really? Even in the late 80s? Well, and here's another thing that comes to mind. And I look in your book, here's a picture of you with all your grandkids. And, you know, you've got 7 grandkids and 8 great-grandkids, not to mention your 4 children. All these people who wouldn't be here if you didn't make it home from the war. If that ACAC had been a little more accurate, you know, you might not have come home. And you've got 4 brothers who can say something really similar. So you 5 boys, you 5 brothers were part of 16 million Americans wearing uniforms during World War II. And we know now what happened, but that wasn't a sure thing. You know, there was no guarantee America was going to win this war. How different would our world be? In light of that, what do you think your kids and grandkids and great-grandkids need to know about what you and your brothers and all those other Americans did and why you did it?
Why we did it, because Hitler was just going roughshod over the whole world. Mm-hmm. And we just pulled up our pants and did what we had to do. And,
it wasn't something you had to think about?
Didn't think about it, no. We just knew we were going, that's it. Wanted to go.
And you mentioned your wife a moment ago. Here's another thing to your story. I know I haven't run across this in all the hundreds of veterans I've interviewed. You and 2 of your brothers married 3 Fresno State College students who were all roommates.
That's true.
How in the world does that happen? I mean, that talk about defying the odds. How did that come about?
Well, as each one came home, my brother Lambert, he came home first.
And he was such a good-looking guy, the roommate said, I hope that guy's got a brother.
Yeah.
And then the other one said, I hope he's got another brother.
I guess that's the way it worked, yeah. I don't know. We just got lucky, that's all.
Well, and I'm going to put up some of these photos from your book on our Hometown Heroes Facebook page and at hometownheroesradio.com. And so the ladies will see what I'm talking about here, that maybe it wasn't too hard to convince those 3 roommates to follow you brothers. I bet that's made life pretty interesting for the last 70 years to have you and your 2 brothers and all your wives are such great friends.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
What was it about Gene that caught your eye? Or were you just expected to marry the roommate?
I thought she was beautiful. And she still is.
68 years of marriage. And every time I meet a couple that's been around that long, I have to ask them. One couple had been married 72 years, and I asked them for the secret. And he gave me a real serious look and said, you really want to know? I said, yeah. He said, well, if you can get past the first 60. The first 60 are tough, but after that, you're... I don't know if that's been your experience.
I'd say the same thing.
No, you're going to get yourself in trouble now, Cal. In all honesty, what is the key? Because I don't think I'm the only one listening that aspires to have that kind of marriage. What has been the secret to your longevity?
Well, we're both easygoing. I don't take life too seriously. Never have. Like even in the service, you know, everybody says, well, you know, how did you manage to do all this? I said, well, you know, it's just life goes on. And, you know, when she says jump, I jump.
Just not quite as high at 92 as you did at 42. Huh?
No. No, I don't jump high anymore.
Well, I don't want to forget to say thank you for serving our country and thank you for telling us a little bit about it. If there's anything else you want us to know, please share. And another thought I have, we talked about your mother and what a burden it must have been for your folks, for your family to have 5 sons mm-hmm. off fighting this war. But all 5 of you came back.
We did. Yeah.
How do you explain that?
I don't know. We had 5 out there, and, you know, it's just amazing we all came back. My brother, the brother next to me who's still living, he went through a much more difficult thing. He was on a battleship. They had the kamikaze pilots hit their ship, and a lot of the officers died, and he went through a lot.
Yeah, that's your brother Grant. I hope to catch up with him as well and share his story with our listeners from the USS New Mexico. So he survives that ship being kamikazed. I know you don't think it was such a big deal, but you survived those 13 missions, including flak on every one and fighters on a couple. I'm not trying to be melodramatic or put words in your mouth, but I'm interested in your genuine perspective. Do you ever feel like something or someone was protecting you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think the good Lord was looking down at us.
Your mama must have been praying a little bit.
Yeah, sure.
Was there anything else I didn't ask you about that you'd like to share?
Well, there's one thing. I was a little disappointed in the fact that they put all the Japanese in internment camps.
Yeah.
That kind of bugged me because I had a lot of good friends that were Japanese. I was born and raised in the country where we had a lot of Japanese workers. Good people. And just because they looked, because they looked different, you know, they interned them. And yet there were Germans out there that looked like us and probably had home country feelings too, but
no doubt
didn't do anything there. So that's always been a little thing that bugged me a little bit.
I'm glad you brought that up, and I would like to explore that a little more with you so people understand. Because when Pearl Harbor happens, you were a senior in high school? Is that right?
Yeah.
So it's about the middle of your senior year when this happens. By the spring, by February of 42, President Roosevelt is issuing that executive order, 9066, that sets up the internment camp. So I imagine at the end of your senior year, you probably had a lot of your classmates or folks you knew in school just disappear.
Absolutely, yeah. That's always been a contention of mine. Some of my best friends were Japanese. It just bothered me. We have one time we've been to several reunions, high school reunions. And no more, incidentally, because I think there's not many of us left. Anyway, at one of the high school reunions, there was a real nice lady, Japanese lady, that was there sitting at my table. She had been put in an internment camp, but she was very pleasant. And then I found out that one of the most popular guys in school was a young Japanese cheerleader. He ended up that he's so ashamed of it, being put in a camp. He ended up being like a recluse, you know, and just never came out of it. I had a lot of good friends there.
Yeah. Well, especially in farming, too. Your family was a farming family, so many of those Japanese-American families in that area in the San Joaquin Valley were doing the same things.
Yeah.
There's some great stories about other families that kept those farms going for the Japanese-Americans while they were in the internment camps and gave them back afterwards.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of other stories of the folks who lost the farm and their home and their property and everything they had.
And everything and never got it back.
Well, and I think it's important for people to hear perspectives like yours, because they may look at what happened and say, well, America was prejudiced. But the people in those towns, in your community, you saw it as injustice.
I did. That's the one thing that has always kind of bugged me about that.
Well, I'm glad you took the time to share that and add to our understanding. Head over to hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page for photos of Cal then and now. And even a little video of Cal and his wife, Jean, discussing their secret behind 68 years of marriage. Next week, we're going to hear from Cal's brother, Grant Erickson, who survived some tragic moments aboard the battleship USS New Mexico. And you heard Cal get emotional when talking about his dad? Wait until you hear the poem included in the only letter their father sent Grant during World War II. We're out of time for now. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.